The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
Woman caught setting fire to a Virgin Mary statue in the Bronx. The woman launches a fiery object onto the statue outside the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary Catholic Church right around 6 p.m. Firefighters responded to the scene on 150th and Melrose Avenues. Within minutes, they put out the fire before the flames could spread. The statue was not badly damaged. Police, though, are searching for the suspect.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's audio from ABC 7 New York, and another church vandalism. This one in the Bronx earlier this week. And as you know, I've been trying to keep you abreast of these events. We saw throughout 2020 these kind of crimes rise to a fever pitch, and they're not going away. And I've said this to you probably 50 times by now. You know, I've watched what happened in Rwanda before the Great Genocide. It was almost as though there was an eruption of evil, an attack on all things that were holy. I'm not going to say that's going to happen here, but I do see certain forces at work. I've never seen so much vandalism. You know, and I'll continue to try to keep you up to date on those church attacks. The latest one, as you heard there, was in the Bronx. Somebody put a pile of clothes. This is what they did. They took clothes. They put it under the statue of Mary outside the Immaculate Conception Church in the Melrose neighborhood, and then they lit it on fire. Unfortunately, the statue's concrete, right? So the damage was minimal. A priest who didn't identify himself to the New York Post said that the woman who did it probably was mentally ill, and there are cases where people just are just not in their right mind, you know, and clearly we see that a lot. I was talking the other day, I think it was Dr. Paul Kengor, somebody who was on the show with me. We're talking about just these attacks on statues itself, even outside the Catholic Church. It takes a lot of effort to decapitate a bronze statue, you know, but you're seeing statues being beheaded. You're seeing churches being filled with graffiti and tabernacles stolen and all sorts of stuff. It's just absolutely tragic. Pray for those individuals. Let's pray for protection as well. But there was a greater tragedy in France this past weekend. I don't know if you caught this. I don't know how much international news you monitor, but you might remember hearing a case of arson that happened at the Cathedral of, I believe it was Nantes in France, where over this past summer, and there was a Rwandan man who was illegally in France, allegedly started that fire. He actually came forward and admitted it to authorities, and you know why he did it? It's not publicly known, but he's been working at the cathedral, and he was released from jail on bond, and then the rector of the cathedral took him in and was housing, feeding, and clothing him until he could be brought to trial. So the relationship ended in a nightmare on Monday when, unfortunately, this man bludgeoned this priest to death. And then he turned himself into police. And he said to have been a model priest, visiting prisoners regularly and being very generous with his time. So all I can do is say, let's pray for this Rwandan man's, his name was Emmanuel Abiyashiga. You know, let's pray for his conversion. And I hate reporting on some of those stories, but you know, they're common, they're happening. I want you to be aware of them. And certainly want to highlight these beautifully heroic and generous priests that are out there, showing love and compassion. And sometimes you see what happens, but again, is it mental illness? Is it something else? I don't know. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, but I'll just touch on it briefly. And then coming up a little bit later, I want to talk to you a little bit about COVID, because I'm seeing all sorts of new variants coming to the fore. And you heard about how infectious the Delta variant is. And I know a lot of vaccinated people who've actually gotten COVID recently. I mean, I'll have to share a story with you coming up in a minute about somebody I work with who I asked a question as to why she was wearing a mask. But I'll share that with you. You're coming up. There's Lambda. There are other variants coming out. Was it Newsweek back? I think it was Newsweek that had the headline, Doomsday Variant. Is there a Doomsday Variant looming? So we'll get into this. If you've got questions regarding COVID, if you're concerned, I'm going to try to answer them all for you coming up. But the Senate passed the infrastructure bill yesterday morning. The upper chamber also took a procedural vote on a budget bill for the next fiscal year. The bill's going to spend, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday. If you missed it, you can go to my archives and dive into a pretty deep interview on it. telling you what it's going to do for the future of the country. The bill would spend $3.5 trillion, and it would fulfill really a liberal wish list. Chuck Schumer is doing the happy dance today, and we'll see what happens. But after that procedural vote was taken, Republicans conducted a 14-hour long, what they call, Votorama session, bringing up, well, numerous amendments that they wanted added to the bill, right? 3.5 mils or trill is not enough, right? Let's add a whole bunch of other things. So one of the amendments would put the Hyde Amendment and some other amendments like it back into the language of the bill. Fortunately, Democrat Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia voted in favor of that language. His single vote allowed the Hyde Amendment to be put back into the bill, at least for the time being. We'll see what happened. But here's Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma. He was speaking during the session on the importance of maintaining that amendment.
Hyde Amendment reflects a decades-long consensus that millions of Americans who are profoundly opposed to abortion should not be forced to pay for the taking of human lives of children or incentivize it with their taxpayer dollars. In a 2020 Marist poll, found that 60% of Americans, including 37% of people who identify as pro-choice, oppose the use of their taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions. Similarly, the Weldon Amendment has been in law since 2004. It protects individuals from being forced to participate in abortion if it would violate their conscience. Millions of Americans of faith and of no faith know that the only difference between a child in the womb and outside the womb is time. Just because they're smaller people doesn't mean they should be any less protected by law.
I love that statement because it makes so much sense, right? You are a human being and alive when you pass through the uterus, right? What happens before then? You're not? I mean, when does life begin? I always thought that was such a fundamental question. Let's argue that point. When does life begin? You know, and shouldn't it be protected, right? It should be protected from the moment of conception through natural death. So, but yeah, Hyde Amendment looks like, and I'm going to thank Senator Lankford for his eloquence there. And of course, let's say a prayer for all of these politicians, all these congresspeople and senators who value life and understand it. What has to happen now is that the House and the Senate are going to convene a joint committee to hammer out the details for the next couple of months so that the budget can then be reached by the 30th of September in time for the federal government's fiscal year, which will then start October 1st. But whether or not the Hyde Amendment will survive that process is an open question. Now, I'm just going to throw this out to you, okay? And I hope it doesn't sound trite or little or, oh, yeah, it's easy to say that. But I think you need to pray for this. You know, I think as Americans, you know, as Catholics, as Christians, as followers of Christ, the people of goodwill, as citizens of this nation, we should protect and defend the most vulnerable amongst us. You might not be able to do anything, right? You might be not be able to do a thing. You think, oh, I have no. Yes, you can. You may not hold position of power or voice or platform, but you can certainly pray. And I'll tell you, your prayers can do more to defend life and to change things in this country than any politician, any world leader, any military. You know, it's interesting. Maggie was pointing out to me as we were talking about this before the show. She says, you know, they always say that life on Mars would be evident even if there was a single cell organism, right? Life would be evident on Mars if we could just find a single cell organism. What about life in the womb, right? I mean, these disconnects, this blindness sometimes, it just amazes me. It does. One final story here, this is for your bizarro file. I mean, again, I don't understand this, to be honest with you. I'm going to share a story with you. I heard and I thought, is that even legal? Check this one out, right? And a little history for you. Back in the 60s and the 70s, right, there was all this uproar in the country over desegregation. Some of you may really remember that. Archbishop Joseph Rummel of New Orleans actually excommunicated. Think about how serious that is. Excommunicated some Catholics because they complained about him desegregating the schools back then. Now, we're talking about excommunicating politicians or abortionists or things like that, right? Because of their position on life. He excommunicated people. That's how powerful this is. And look, by the way, racism is an intrinsic evil. I want to be very clear about that. You know, we can't water that down. That it's an intrinsic evil. Black students in Montgomery, Alabama, they were brought to school by National Guard back then. And you probably remember this from video you've seen, or maybe you lived through it. But Boston forcibly bused children from black neighborhoods to white ones in order just to integrate schools. We had this big integration movement back in the time. Well, all that effort, it might be in vain, right? There is a black principal in Atlanta. Check this out. At Mary Lynn Elementary School, apparently she segregated all the black students into two classrooms and all the white students into six classrooms. When I heard the story, I said, that can't be right. Is that even legal? She's segregating the students by the color of their skin. A black mother, of course, has filed a complaint with the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. I'm glad she did. Bravo. I'll stand with you on that. Atlanta Public Schools said that they've looked into the matter and they have resolved the issue. What's that mean? I don't know. How do you resolve that issue? Fire her? Educate her? I mean, just absolutely, absolutely bizarre. So anyway, that's just some of the headlines that I wanted to bring you up to speed on. Some news you might hear, you may not hear, but some stuff I think you should be aware of. So is it hype or are you going to face a doomsday variant? I was talking with Maggie before the broadcast. We were looking at some of the audio for the show together. We were just talking about COVID and the vaccines that have come out. And then we talked about the different variants that have come out. And it used to be the Brazil or the British or the, you know, the variant from this. Now they went to the Greek, you know, alphabet. And we have names like, you know, the Delta variant and now the Lambda. And there's some others that are coming out as well. But Newsweek ran a piece and their headline caught my attention because it says, hype or do we face a doomsday variant? The Delta outbreak, they say, is going to be much worse. That warning comes from Michael Osterholm. He's an epidemiologist who leads the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. And he says the number of intensive care beds needed could be higher than any time we have seen. He adds that his team's analysis shows that every single one of the 100 million unvaccinated Americans who hasn't had COVID will likely get it in the coming months. So if you're not vaccinated, just turn up the radio a bit. I'm just reporting. This is from this particular story. I want you to hear that. We're going to speak to Dr. Robert Tabali about this. We'll get his take on it. And you are welcome to call in, and we'll be more than glad to have you join the conversation. I just want to repeat that again. This is an epidemiologist who leads the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. He says the number of intensive care beds needed could be higher than any time we've seen. And he says that his team shows that almost every single one of the 100 million unvaccinated Americans who hasn't had the COVID-19 yet will likely get it in the coming months, short of taking sort of a strong isolation and masking precautions. It seems unlikely in this vaccine-hesitant population, he says. While the damage from the Delta starts to subside, other variants may be lurking just behind it to pull us back down again. And the World Health Organization is already keeping an eye on several, like Eta, which is now in several countries, Kappa, which arose in India, Iota, which first popped up in New York City, and especially Lambda, which tore through Peru. And now, signs of having unusual success in infecting fully vaccinated people is beginning to cause a lot of concern. I can't tell you how many people I know that have been vaccinated right now and are suffering from COVID. Patrick was asking me in the hospital. One of my Patrick's on the phone today for me. Patrick and Maggie, I know you're in the studio here with me. And I hope Rose doesn't mind. She's at the front desk. She was wearing a mask the other day, and she came in, and I said, what are you wearing a mask for? She goes, I went to a funeral, and after the funeral was over, I got a phone call. 19 of the people who attended this funeral came down with COVID-19. I said, are you kidding me? She says, yeah, I went to the doctors. I've been tested. I'm fine, but of course, you know, this could manifest in the next 14 days, so I'm going to wear a mask, and the doctor told me to be careful. And I said, well, thanks for letting me know. I appreciate it. She says, yeah, but some of the people have been vaccinated. She said, one person had the monococcal or whatever that was, the antibody infusion. Another person is on oxygen. So we're seeing the three of them are in the hospital. At least others are fighting it off at home. So we are seeing Lambda and some of these viruses spread to Argentina, Chile, Ecuador, Texas, South Carolina, and it may be coming to you. Dr. Robert DiBolli is going to be with me here in a second. I want to get his take on all this. And, of course, you can join us as well. But if you haven't heard about Lambda, maybe you haven't heard about Gamma, right? Here's some insight from USA Today on some of the latest variants. Listen to this.
In recent weeks, there have been a number of cases in the U.S. It's nowhere near the level of the Delta variant, but it is still a variant of the coronavirus that the World Health Organization recently listed as a variant of interest. The Lambda variant first originated in Peru late last year. It jumped to a couple other countries in South America. Scientists don't necessarily think it's as transmissible as the Delta variant. Now, that's not to say that it won't necessarily become a variant that we become more concerned about over time. A hospital in the Houston area reported its first case of the Lambda variant. I spoke with a physician at the Houston hospital. He compared the Lambda variant to the Gamma variant, which was first detected in Brazil. At one point, you know, there were concerns among public health officials here in the U.S. that the Gamma variant would become the dominant strain, but that didn't happen, and that was largely because the Delta variant was spreading so easily. So whether the Lambda variant follows that path of the Gamma variant sort of remains to be seen. The COVID-19 vaccines that are currently authorized for use in the United States, there isn't necessarily a whole lot of long-term and widespread data about how effective they are against the Lambda variant. But physicians, you know, generally agree that the chances are that the vaccines will still have some level of efficacy against the Lambda variant.
There you have it. So I know a girl, too. My daughter came home. She says a good friend of hers has been vaccinated, she and her husband, and she came down with COVID. I said, she was vaccinated? She goes, yeah, and she had the vaccine, but she's lost her sense of smell and taste. So are we seeing variations? What looms in your future? That's what I want to look at right now. We'll talk about it, okay? Dr. Robert DiBolli joins me. He is wonderful infectious disease doc, a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois. And you can check him out at his website. Everybody wants to get connected to him, and I think you should. He's a very bright physician. Germbusters.com. That's how you do that. Dr. DiBolli, great to have you with me. Good afternoon.
Good to be with you, Drew. And as the 1950s radio said, only the shadow knows. You know, like, who knows what's going to happen?
I know.
This whole COVID thing one surprise after another, isn't it?
It really is. And as I was monitoring a lot of this stuff, I mean, the Newsweek articles really got me. You know, is there a doomsday variant looming? And who knows? I mean, we don't know. I mean, the probability of that, I would think, is probably low, but maybe not. You know, I know that the mutations take place, and sometimes they're very mild, and others can be severe. What do you make of all these different variants that we're seeing, though? You know, we make our way through the Greek alphabet there. Give me your take on where we are right now. And there's been a lot of talk about how contagious Delta is right now. And I'm also wondering if vaccines are effective against it.
Well, the Delta is so infectious. You know, initially, it appeared that when we first met coronavirus about a year and a half ago, it appeared that there were about between 2 and 4 people infected for every person who had infection. So they would go on to infect at least 2 to 4 other people. Well, the Delta variant infects 8 people. It might even be a little more, might be a little less, but on average, eight other people. So it's much more infectious. The vaccines appear to continue to have activity against the Delta variant in protecting against symptomatic and then also severe disease. They're pretty effective in doing that. There was something that just splashed across the wires today, a Mayo Clinic article about the fact that the vaccines aren't that effective in preventing infection.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference between preventing infection and having symptomatic disease, and then further, there's a difference between having severe disease where you need supplemental oxygen or other help. But most of the people that are vaccinated who get infected with a Delta variant have asymptomatic disease or barely symptomatic disease.
Wow.
They may feel like they have a head cold, and that's about it. A small percentage of them go on to have symptomatic disease where they have loss of taste or smell, fevers, chills, fatigue, that type of thing. And even yet a smaller percentage, much smaller percentage, have severe disease. So, I want to say that the vaccines continue to be protective, But there's all sorts of different angles being, you know, played on the data. So this report that I read that just came on the wire like about a half an hour ago was that the Pfizer vaccine is only 42% effective against preventing acquisition or infection with the Delta variant. But in the same article, there's, you know, it's more than 95% protective against severe disease, and it's like 88% effective against symptomatic disease. But these vaccines are not a barrier that prevents you from getting infected. So you can get infected, you can pass it on, which really bothers me right now because hospitals are starting to disenfranchise doctors and nurses and support staff if they're not vaccinated, even if they've had infection and acquired natural immunity. If somebody gets vaccinated right now in the age of Delta, it's protective for them.
Right.
It's protective for them. It doesn't prevent them from getting it and passing it on to somebody else. So, interestingly, the same study that I was just talking about just came out. One dose of the Moderna vaccine is pretty highly effective against preventing Delta, symptomatic Delta infection, and highly protective against preventing a severe infection with Delta. Now, that's just one dose of the Moderna. Now, what's the difference between the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine? Aren't they exactly the same? Aren't they both messenger RNA vaccines?
Yep.
Well, yes, but no. The Moderna has three times the amount of messenger RNA in it.
Wow.
Roughly three times. So it's like instead of getting a single shot of vodka in your martini, you're getting three.
Wow.
And so it therefore causes, we would expect it to cause the production of more of the spike protein in the person who gets the vaccination, and we would expect it to be more immunostimulant than the Pfizer. They're both very good vaccines, but the Moderna is kind of, you know, a little supercharged on the amount of messenger RNA.
Well, I learned something new today. That's fantastic. Hold the thought, though. I have to take a quick break here. When we come back, we will take a few calls for you, too. If you want to get in, we're taking a look at the rising variants that are out there, plugging you into what you need to know regarding Delta and Lambda and all the other ones that might unfold. Could there be a doomsday variant? And also, how effective is the vaccine that you may have already gotten against these variants? Should you wait to get a vaccine that covers them all? Or should you go and get your vaccine now to make sure that you're safe? We're going to continue to look at that and more when I return. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester. All right, great to be with you today. Thanks for joining me, speaking with Dr. Robert Tobolli, an infectious disease doctor, getting you plugged into what you need to know about all these variants that are out there and how effective the vaccines that you have already taken may be. Maybe you got the Pfizer, maybe you got the Moderna, maybe you went with J&J, maybe you're waiting on Novavax, right? What do you need to know? We'll get you plugged in right now. And if you're on hold, I'll do my very best to get you on the air here. There's one line open at 888-914-9149. And Dr. Tobolli, let's jump right into the phones. You and I were talking during the break about Novavax. Pat in Minneapolis, Minnesota has got a question for you regarding that. Pat, good afternoon.
Oh, yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. Yes, I would like to know. I'm kind of waiting, actually, for that particular vaccine because I think I have some other medical things that might not be okay to take the other vaccines, you know, for that.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering about that situation, and I heard that they say they're thinking of using that as a booster if need be. Also, there is a Dr. Teresa Deischer, I think, Drew, you've had her on the show, who said that the viruses usually come in waves of five, each one more contagious but less virulent. I wonder what his opinion is on that. And then also the last thing that they have on their website, they have a type of a purified dexamethasone that they can give for compassionate care for those that are in very moderate to severe illness that have tried other things before that weren't working.
Right.
It looked to me like on that site that it was 2 to 7 days and you'd be good to go.
Right.
So I think somebody should look into that and say, hey, you know, it's if that's available to us, then there's a little less fear around if we know that there's some other options available to us in a therapeutic kind of situation. If you would talk about those as well.
Pat, thanks. Great questions. You might have to wait a while for Novavax, I think. Doctor, why don't you fill her in on that first, and we can address some of her other questions.
Yeah, I have an unrequited love for Novavax, and so I could write a novel about this. Apparently, they announced a couple of days ago that they're going to wait till the fourth quarter now to apply for the emergency use authorization. Now, the issue with Novavax is that it's a kind of a virginal company. It's never brought a product to market through the FDA. And they got a big amount of money, big chunk of money from the last administration with advanced payment for doses and so on. And now the FDA is troubled by their, you know, saying that they might not be able to produce the doses that, you know, they promise and so on. But the long story short is the vaccine's kind of an older vaccine technology. It's still new, relatively new, but older than the messenger RNA. It's something that a lot of people that are vaccine hesitant, I believe, would warm to or embrace. And it's got far less side effects, and it's just about as protective as the messenger RNA vaccines. So it seems like a magic bullet, doesn't it? But unfortunately, Novavax, because they've not been in the marketplace a long time, they don't have all the glad-handing people that used to work in the FDA and work in government, you know, to grease the skids to get the drugs through. And so it's a very complex set of things they have to go through, and it's relationship-driven. So as you can imagine, Pfizer has people on the board that are former directors of Health and Human Services, of the FDA, you know, and so they can just, they have got everybody's phone number in their cell phone. They can call and say, hey, you know, how's our product coming through the FDA right now? So let's have a steak dinner and talk about it. You know, it's relationship driven. I mean, it's scientifically driven, yes, but everything in our country is relationship driven as well. And Novavax just doesn't have those relationships, and they don't have the onboard in-house expertise to get those things through. And I think that's why we're seeing them struggle getting their FDA package together, because it's kind of it's either full on or full off once you drop your data off. You know, they don't say, well, Johnny, you know, correct the grammar and then right. resubmit it. I mean, it has to be perfect. So, I mean, I want the Novavax. I love the Novavax. You know, the side effect profile is wonderful. I would tell people, you know, if the previous administration, one of their characteristics was, you know, greasing the skids for everybody to get things through, giving a helping hand, and that's not happening in this administration.
Yeah.
And what may happen if Pfizer gets the full approval, they only grant emergency use authorization when there's no other product in a category of illness or, you know, that in a means of a crisis where they need a product and there's none on the market.
Yeah.
And so if Pfizer gets that approval, that may close the window of opportunity for Novavax to get anything, you know, without supplying 3 or 5 years of data.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, if you're interested, like I am, you know, call your congressman, call your state, call your U.S. senator, and tell them to get on the horn and get something done here. Because, you know, Fauci, as much as I respect him, he says the other day that just as soon as the Pfizer gets full approval, everybody will warm to it.
Huh.
I mean, he's missing the boat on that. I mean, he doesn't know what the opinion on the street is. The vaccine hesitant are not going to warm to the messenger RNA vaccines if they get full approval. No, they won't, you know, and they're going to force this on everyone. And I have talked over and over again about how I had it a year ago and thought I was going to die, and I didn't.
Yeah.
But I really don't want to get vaccinated myself with one of the messenger RNA because I'm concerned about having a hyper immune reaction because I believe that I may have likely had COVID again a second time, but that wasn't proven either.
But that's just you personally, too, right, Doctor? For those who are getting it or who have gotten it, I mean, the messenger RNA technology is pretty revolutionary, and it's safe for most people or not? I know you're not going to get that. You'd like to get Novavax, but if what you're saying is true, and Fauci's saying within a couple of weeks we might see FDA approval of these vaccines, Novavax door is going to be shut. So what do you do in a situation like that, and how safe is Pfizer or Moderna?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, there's a small subset of patients that you wouldn't want to recommend them having the vaccines. People with severe autoimmune disorders and things like that where it could knock them up, or a history of allergy to one of the components of the vaccine. But, you know, me personally, I'm just a little hesitant.
Right.
I am strong pro-vaccine. I think everybody should get one if they're open to it. They're very safe.
Yeah.
You read about problems in the newspaper and everything, but you're talking, you know, in the order of like 0.7 to 0.1%
Wow.
of all the people that get vaccinated. I mean, it's hugely small, but the papers make it seem like it's an everyday phenomenon. And so, you know, the point I was just trying to make was that it's coming down the pike where you're going to need to be vaccinated and be able to prove it, or many people are going to lose their jobs. Doctors and nurses are going to be disenfranchised from hospitals. And it's really going to be a, you know, a force majeure, you know, from the top down on it. And so I've got no problem at all recommending the vaccine for most, certainly most everyone.
Yeah.
And
so let's follow up also on Pat's other question there, too. I think she had two others. The other was Dr. Deischer and the other variants that will come from that. I forget the third part of her question. Do you remember that? If not, I'll go back to her.
She was asking about purified dexamethasone
and
stuff. The COVID vaccination is kind of like a hurricane. You can think of it at hurricane stage. First, you have the leading edge of the hurricane, which is the viral infection, and that kind of causes some, you know, ravages a little bit. And then you have the eye of the hurricane, 1 to 2 day symptomatic improvement in the middle. And then you have the tail end of the hurricane, which oftentimes does the most damage. Well, that's the immunological reaction, which is where people have the sudden onset of shortness of breath, get the lung injury, start having the blood clots, and that's where you know the proverbial all hell breaks loose is in that immunological end. And that's where dexamethasone helps. So dexamethasone is not a medicine you take at the beginning of COVID. You take it when you're having difficulty breathing or oxygen requiring. The medicine remdesivir that people know about, intravenous, that started when people are it should be started late in the first phase of the infection, late in the viral phase. If it started late in the immunological phase, it really does nothing. We do have a lot of these monoclonal antibodies, and a lot of people forget about that stuff. So if you're over age 60, have comorbid condition, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, cancer, leukemia, lymphoma, that type of thing, organ transplant, and you're around people, and you know you may get COVID, you need to seek out, usually it's given through an emergency department, but you need to ask for the monoclonal antibody, which is designed to give to people at the early stages of infection, very early stages of infection. It's what Trump got. Remember, he said he felt so good after it, whatever. But those have been shown to be dramatically effective at reducing severe infection in even in people with severe medical comorbidities.
Yep.
So, but they're dramatically being undergiven.
Yep.
You know, they're just kind of rotting on the shelves. So, you know, the docs are forgetting about it. They don't know about it. But an educated medical consumer, you'd be good to ask, you know, I need that. There's other medicines that other doctors are, you know, doctors are prescribing, like ivermectin and a number of other things that appear to be effective in studies in Mexico and India, like 70 to 80% decrease in hospitalization when given early in infection. They appear to have an antiviral component, an anti-inflammatory component.
Yeah.
And so ivermectin use is kind of exploding, not only around the world, but even here in the United States,
That's
despite
great.
All the kind of negative voodoo stuff that was pushed on it.
Well,
but, you know, there's so there's a lot of other medicines that appear to have similar effectiveness.
That's good.
Now, what was it? an anti-cholesterol medicine was found to have antiviral properties as well, and be supportive in that.
Let's do this, Doctor. I have a few minutes, and I want to make sure I get as many people on who patiently are waiting. A lot of great questions here for you. Julia is listening in Arcadia, California. She wants to join the conversation. Julia, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
I can, Julie. Good.
Hello.
It's good to hear you.
No. Yeah, because I got off the radio. Okay, I don't know if they asked this question because I got off the radio. I had to. But my daughter is an infectious disease. My daughter is an infectious disease specialist, and I was asking her yesterday, what's all the hysteria now that, you know, the hospitalizations or the people dying from COVID? She was telling me, Mother, don't worry, you're vaccinated. 99% of the people vaccinated don't get hospitalized, don't die. So isn't it more important, because I'm seeing the hysteria, I'm in L.A. County, and, you know, we have mandated masks, a lot of, you know, things that happened at the beginning of COVID. I just to start trying to get people to get vaccinated. Because when she told me that, I was surprised.
Yeah,
99%.
Julie, that's a great question, and that's the battle that we're having in the culture right now, Doctor. As you know, in the current administration, trying to get people out there. If you force and harangue those who don't feel they should get it, or have either moral concerns or, let's say, medical concerns, they only get more entrenched in their position. Yet, according to you, according to Julie's daughter, if you are vaccinated and you happen to contract COVID-19, your symptoms are far less. And hospital beds are filling up with people who have not been vaccinated. So where do you stand on this? Should there be a stronger push from the church, from other sectors? Should people be more open to getting these vaccines? Where do you stand on that?
Well, there's a lot of... I believe very strongly in the vaccines. 99% is a little higher than the measured data, but you know, it's in the 90+% that it's protective against severe disease. The landmark stuff is happening in Israel right now, where even among the elderly, only about 2.6% of patients that have been vaccinated among the elderly, those above like 65, with comorbid conditions. Only that very small percentage are hospitalized with severe disease. So the vaccines are highly, highly, highly protective.
Okay.
And if you're a 20 to 30 year old in California and you're starting to get worried about the Delta variant, because it's a disease of the unvaccinated, really, a severe disease of the unvaccinated, and you want to get vaccinated, you want to get protections as quick as possible, you'd want to ask for the Moderna shot. I was quoting earlier, the Moderna shot, just one shot is 96% effective against serious disease, hospitalization-level disease. Although you want to get the two-shot series, you want to complete the series, but just getting one shot under your belt is highly protective against you getting from serious disease. So,
all right. That's good. You know, Doctor, let me move along because I've got to take a break here in a quick moment. I just want to, speaking of California, give everybody a quick update. I just received a news report that California has become the first state to require vaccine or regular COVID testing for teachers. So if you are in the state of California, that news now just coming across my radar. In fact, let me take the break now. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls. Lindsay in Rhode Island wants to know, how effective are the vaccines and are there long-term side effects? We'll pick her up. There's calls from Hawaii to Maine. We'll grab your calls on the other side. Stay with us. Our guest today, Dr. Robert Tobolli, looking at how effective your vaccine is. And of course, these new and strange variants that continue to rise and are being reported. What looms in the future? Stay with us. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Relevant Radio.
All right, great to be with you. Thanks for tuning in. Boy, if you were just getting plugged in, giving you your COVID-19 update, the CDC just came out a little while ago recommending that pregnant women get vaccinated against COVID-19. We'll talk about that coming up as well. You might be saying, hey, I've not gotten vaccinated yet because I'm hearing some really negative things about these about the vaccines and affecting fertility. So I know that's a question on a lot of people's minds. We'll explore that. The Delta variant, of course, is causing a lot of havoc. A lot of people concerned. The rate of infection and hospitalizations and deaths are going up. And you might have heard Cardinal Raymond Burke, who we'll pray for in a few minutes, has tested positive for COVID-19. And he says he's resting comfortably today. Of course, he's getting excellent medical care, I hope. And let's pray for him and pray for all those who are now battling it. But we're taking a look at the different variants, all named after the letters of the Greek alphabet. There's Eta, there's Kappa, there's Iota and Lambda, and they continue to climb. My guest today, Dr. Robert Tabali, an infectious disease doctor. Check him out at germbusters.com. He's extremely busy, but if you do want to email him, he says he'll eventually get back to you, so you can check him out. But, doctor, it's good to have you. Let's jump back into the phones. A lot of people patiently waiting to speak with you. We'll start in Rhode Island. Lindsay has got, I think, an important question. Lindsay, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, I've been hearing how effective the vaccine is, but how safe is it? Do we know for sure, like, could years down the road there be side effects we don't know about, especially because I'm pregnant right now, and they've really been trying to push the vaccine on me, but I feel like there haven't been enough babies born to know if it's going to affect babies and things like that, so I just wanted to get your take on that.
All right. Doctor, did you make all that out? Lindsay, your signal was kind of broken up, but I think we made it out.
I think I heard it. Now, the question is essentially, is the vaccine safe in pregnancy, and should I get it? I'm pregnant right now. And if you were to ask me, I would say the data are that Delta is ravaging the country right now. 4 weeks ago, we had 5,000 cases a day of COVID. Today, we have 180,000 cases a day. We're facing a wave. Virtually everyone who hasn't been infected already will likely get infected in the next 2 to 3 months. Not everyone, but virtually everyone. And if you're pregnant and you get infected, you have a much higher risk of very serious disease, and or death. And so the vaccine is highly protective. And you can read, you can look and find people talking about the spike protein and in the ovaries and possibly that it could go to the placenta and that type of thing.
Yep.
But I must tell you that the spike protein you get when you get natural infection is, hundreds, if not many thousands of times more amount of spike protein if you get a natural infection with COVID. And the vaccine, you kind of want to be prepared for what's coming, because what's coming is you're likely going to be exposed to Delta and in not too distant future. And I would strongly consider your doctor's advice about getting vaccinated. I think it's safe. There was an article that came out in the New England Journal last week, or maybe a week and a half ago. It was Pfizer. It showed that it was very, very safe in pregnant women. There have been reports occasionally of miscarriages in the first trimester, but that happens with virtually any vaccine.
Yeah. Well, the CDC today, doctor, has come out and said that COVID-19 vaccines are recommended for all people 12 and older, including people who are pregnant. I'm going to quote them here: breastfeeding, trying to get pregnant now, or might become pregnant in the future. And that's the Center for Disease and Control. So, whether you believe them or not, I guess that's up to you. But you would say it's okay to get vaccinated, just in summer here, because I need to move along.
Absolutely. If she was my sister or my cousin, right, I would tell her get the vaccine.
Awesome. Mary's got a similar question for you, so let me bring her into the conversation. She's listening in Maywood, New Jersey. Mary, go right ahead.
Yes, I'm just wondering how safe it is to get the vaccination if someone has thyroid problems and lymphocytic colitis.
Okay.
Well, these vaccines can cause autoimmune dysfunction to bump up a little bit. So if you have like lupus or angiitis or autoimmune disorders, I think with what you're describing, even if you had an autoimmune thyroid condition like Hashimoto's or whatever, certainly I think that the vaccines are very safe in that situation.
Right.
And I doubt that there would be any problem. Vaccinated, you know, many, many hundreds of patients under my care, and you know, as outpatient, and you know, with similar and worse conditions, and most everybody that I've touched and been with has not had a problem whatsoever. The things you get are the headache and the soreness at the injection site, and that's really kind of it. You feel after the second shot, you get a little worse headache, a little worse tired, but then it's over. So it's much better to get the vaccine and go through whatever side effects you get from the vaccine than getting natural infection.
Gotcha.
The natural infection is far, far worse than any potential from the vaccine.
Yeah, Mary, thanks for your patience. Mary in Hawaii is calling too. She's been holding for a while. Mary, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. My question is, what other vaccines are coming up that there might be in the near future?
All right, great question. Now, Doctor, you mentioned Novavax. We know what's already out. Are there any other in the pipeline?
Well, there's a lot of vaccine candidates around the world, but what happens when the space gets filled up in the U.S., people, because it's so expensive to bring something to market, that people don't invest in it. Sanofi had a vaccine that kind of didn't work out, and then they had another candidate vaccine. And Merck and Sanofi both opted to, if my knowledge is correct, they both opted, it wasn't financially feasible for them to continue pursuing their Sanofi's second and Merck's first vaccine candidate. And so you're probably not going to find a whole lot more vaccine choice in the future, other than the messenger RNA vaccines and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which I have moral troubles with.
I do too.
And then possibly the Novavax. Novavax's sweet spot might be the booster market in the future, like a year from now. But
yeah, speaking of boosters, Mary, thank you for your call. So those are your choices right now. Anne in Boston has got a question about booster shots. Anne, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Doctor, I was considering getting a booster shot in the fall or winter if it's available, because I had the Pfizer vaccine in February, and I was wondering whether or not now that you said Moderna is very effective against the variant, whether you could switch to Moderna when you have a different vaccine, when you have the booster shot, and whether or not you think that soon after being vaccinated would be necessary to get a booster shot.
Great question.
That's a very good question. And so a lot of the bright people that make these decisions at a high level are, you know, one of their considerations is that it might be better to mix and match vaccines when you considered having a booster, because the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine, their difference is more than just the amount of messenger RNA. They actually have different gene sequences in their messenger RNA. You know, one is, you know, long story short, they're a little different, and so there may be some added advantage in having a little bit of a different vaccine as a booster. And so that strategy is probably going to play itself out.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're thinking that far ahead right now, though, to put that decision into motion.
There's talk about putting a booster into a flu shot. I'm hoping that comes at some point in the future. I think that'll happen, you know, where people get their yearly flu shot and you know, you also have your COVID booster. I don't know whether that's going to be a reality or not. Maybe we're too far away.
I certainly think that's a very strong possibility. And that Novavax, because it stored at regular refrigerator temperature like the flu vaccine, and it has a long shelf life, might be a better candidate than the high maintenance Pfizer and Moderna shots.
Sure. So. All right, Jim's listening in Covina, California. Jim, you're on the air with Dr. Tabari. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I have a question. Well, actually, three of them. First of all, if you take the Pfizer first vaccine, is that effective? Second question is, you know, here are a lot of people, I don't know if it's political or just, you know, it goes back and forth. If you take the mRNA, is something eventually inevitable going to happen to you down the line? And third, being a Catholic, is it wrong to take the vaccine? You hear people say, you know, you're sinning, you shouldn't do that. And I don't understand this HEK293. How does that relate to it?
All right, let's say there's a lot there, Doctor. Let's first start with the one part of the question where he says, hey, should we be concerned about something? mRNA technology is relatively new in these vaccines. Do we know what's going to happen? And, you know, this is not federally, the FDA has not approved it yet, and who knows what's going to happen in the not-too-distant future. We'll ramp up your immune system. Well, you know, who knows? People, there's a lot of theories that are out there that if you get sickness, so there'll be this, you know, there'll be complications because you had mRNA. Any concern at all with mRNA vaccinations and what might come in the future from this?
Well, they don't alter your genes, so they're not gene modifying therapies. So it would take an hour to explain that, but if a lot of people think that they will change their genetic character forever, and it may change the genetic character of their right. progeny, their children and grandchildren, right. that's not going to happen. Secondly, there was a question, if you take just one Pfizer, is that highly protective? The, right. the data that I saw was just on the Moderna. I may have overlooked the Pfizer, but I think the point they were making was that the if you're only going to get one vaccine before you were going to get exposed to the Delta right now on August 11th, 2021, you might want to get the Moderna because we're in an exponential rise of Delta infection across the country right now.
Right.
And then with the Catholic healthcare and everything, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is made in a broth of, you know, the aborted fetal cells. There's occasionally that's the only vaccine that's that can be used. They're giving it to people coming across the border because they have one opportunity to give them a shot. Right. It's a one-time shot. I don't recommend it for anybody if they have opportunity right. to get either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine.
Yep.
So
and let me just put a fine point on it. The bishops and the Holy See have said getting the shot is not sinful, so you may want to consider that.